Hello and welcome to the Business of InfoSec podcast with me, Michelle Ribeiro. In this podcast, we chat to senior information and cybersecurity executives from a range of industries about their passions, experiences, and challenges. Without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Business of InfoSec podcast. This week, we are talking about dealing with identity theft. And joining me is Cozy Robinson, who is the Cyber Resilience and Education Analyst at UniSuper. Hello, Cozy. How are you?
Hi, Michelle. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm really excited for our chat today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me to do this.
It's a pleasure to have you. Would you like to start by sharing a little bit about your background and maybe just a little bit about how you ended up in a cybersecurity role?
Yeah, sure, Michelle. I've got so many factors that played a part in how I moved into cybersecurity. And I was motivated to get into cybersecurity for a number of reasons and also a series of events and circumstances as well. So in summary, there were a combination of having worked over 20 years as an executive assistant, I wanted to challenge myself. Also a decade ago, I became a victim of identity theft. I've always been an inquisitive and vigilant person as well, and catching bad guys in my neighbourhood, which I can talk about after. And this sort of innate nature of stopping criminals helped drive my interest in cybersecurity. And I also have connections within the cybersecurity industry as well. And over the years, I've reached out, you know, to them and asked their advice on where to start. And so I did this by sort of reading news articles, you know, watching TV shows on cybercrime, listening to podcasts as well, and also enrolling into a two-year part-time course to study cybersecurity while working full-time.
That's very, very interesting. Thank you so much, Cozy. And you have an amazing career transition into cyber. So I'd like to ask you if you could share a little bit about your background and maybe a little bit about your role as an executive assistant and how did you transition?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've previously worked, as I've mentioned, for over 20 years as an EA, and mostly for large organisations such as Ernst & Young in both Melbourne and London, PwC here in Melbourne, Goldman Sachs and Transurban, and other organisations through the years. So my experience working in these organisations provided me with, you know, an enormous amount of professional experience, but it also gave me a vast amount of opportunities as well, learning new things, new experiences, also different types of people working with different executives, systems, and great experience to work in another country, being in London, the UK. So one of the best things I did in my career was live and work in London as well. And also when I came back from London, I worked for a managing partner of Ernst & Young. She's now at PwC. And those positions gave me a lot of confidence and belief in my capabilities as well. So it was quite good to do that. Another reason, like, I've had studied graphic design as well. So part-time and full-time, I was lucky during the global financial crisis to study full-time at RMIT. And so I still apply these principles of design where I can in the work I do. So looking at layout, using visual cues in my presentation, the use of typography, so arranging text and letters in a way that makes it visually clear and appealing to the audience, and just to get that message across. So again, everything's been extremely important in the role I have today, speaking about cybersecurity and how they can understand and interpret it, especially when they're not working within that area and they have a little knowledge of it. So now, as you've mentioned, I work for UniSuper, and it's been over 2 years, and half of that time I've been working as a cyber resilience and education analyst, and I assist in developing creative ways to ensure cybersecurity is front of mind through communication and training to help educate, influence and engage UniSuper employees about cybersecurity risks and their responsibilities that relate to the cybersecurity policy standards and controls. And in that role, I develop and run phishing simulation campaigns each month. So I then perform the analysis of reporting those statistics as well. And during that time, I identify the top human risks and behaviours and speak with repeat clickers. And there's a lot of other things that I do as well in my role, but also part of that is assisting the security operations team. And that's looking at the analysis and email headers of those phishing emails that are reported. And I remove those threats from other people's inboxes in the organisation. So it's been extremely, you know, important in educating employees on how to remain cyber safe at work and home. And just with these regular phishing simulations and constant awareness, education articles, helping train people to be vigilant against the potential threats and attacks. So we perform really well in this area because we are constantly training our employees and we're just raising awareness and building that cyber resilience across UniSuper for end users to learn about the best practices and what they face every day, the threats.
That's amazing, Cozy. It's so inspiring. And it's very interesting to see so many experiences that you could transfer into your new role in cybersecurity. Now, if we can't find you at your work desk, where are you?
Yes, good question. I do get a bit restless, so it is hard to be at the desk sometimes. I will admit that. But I'm either downstairs getting a coffee with the team. We do that, which is quite nice, on a regular basis in the morning. I'll do a bit of a walk on the floor and say hi to the other team members. I could also be presenting at a meeting. I do a lot of presentations. Or if I'm working from home, I'll be off for a quick run during my lunch break as well, or talking to the CISO at work as well. So, yeah, it's quite good.
Yeah, that sounds lovely. And you mentioned you like to run. And before we started recording, you mentioned that you try to run 20 to 30 Ks every week. So yes. That's amazing. What else do you like to do? What else do you have as a hobby?
Yeah, so I also love to head to my yoga studio. I'm trying to make sure that I go 3 times a week as well. And it's hot yoga, so it's quite hard, especially during the hot weather as well. But good for balance and good for mindfulness and getting away from the computer screen. I'm kind of always bad checking emails and things like that. So it does help get me away from that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a dual benefit. You get fit and then you also have a little bit of the mindfulness and you can work on your mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important. Everyone does that.
So now moving on a little bit into the topic that we came here to talk about today. So can you tell us a little bit about your career journey and how you shifted to the cybersecurity space?
Yeah, sure, Michelle. I'll elaborate on those dot points that I mentioned at the start. So after working for 20 years as an EA, I was working for Transurban and a team and a boss I loved working with. I'm also very loyal. And throughout that time I was working with him, I was offered a couple of opportunities in cybersecurity during finding out my identity theft. And I'll talk about that. But I didn't want to leave my boss at the time. I was really comfortable. I felt happy and content. I love the team. I love the business of Transurban still today. I also felt bad at the thought of leaving him, and we worked together so well for many years and loved the company. I understood it really well. And I realized that he was going on a career break, and I knew that I needed to push myself and be uncomfortable out of my comfort zone and take a chance. So I was trying to think about what I would do next, because I couldn't kind of picture myself leaving him, but things were changing at the time at that company. And work was kind of slowing down for me as well as he was kind of moving on. So I was getting a bit bored, and I knew that I could have stayed there and been moved into another maybe project role. But I was going to be doing sort of just tasks that I wasn't going to be challenged in. So I realized, no, I need to take a step out of my comfort zone. I'm sure a lot of EAs listening and support people would understand this, is that sometimes you don't feel really heard or seen or valued as much as you should be, and you may be overlooked. So it's sort of like you're sitting in a meeting and you're taking minutes, but you know, you don't really have a voice, you're not able to contribute to the meetings, you're kind of sitting in the shadows. So I was kind of tired of sort of, you know, being that person seen and pocketed into, maybe, you know, as much as they loved getting their coffees, I didn't want to be that person anymore or seen for just that, you know, that sort of role. And I wanted to be heard and have a voice and also challenge myself. Not saying that being an EA doesn't challenge you, it definitely does, but I think the roles are definitely, you know, you're not as appreciated as much as you could be sometimes. So I wanted to make a difference in people's lives, especially after the experience I've had. Life's too short. You know, I can see that they were moving on, so I needed to do something as well and follow my heart and my passion, change my career path. I didn't know how to do this at first, so I kind of threw myself into the deep end. I got it. I was really sad to leave Transurban, but it was a good career move for me as well, because it got me out of my comfort zone. So part of that perfect storm, I'd say, was a decade ago I became a victim of identity theft, and that shook me for so many reasons and changed my life. And part of my motivation was to work in an industry that helps prevent cyber attacks and criminals from doing this to other people and organizations. So I knew a lot of people would sadly suffer this crime that I did as well. So I wanted to move into this field and do something in this industry that helped others and get into this world of cybersecurity. I also wanted to challenge myself, as I've mentioned, in ways I've never done. And cybersecurity definitely does that. And it really motivated me to learn new things. I'm learning all the time, every day. And it doesn't end. The learning never ends. It's not like you can just do a certain amount of courses and say, okay, now I know everything. Even CISOs will know that. I've always been an inquisitive person as well. And let's just say, you know, catching the bad guys. I've always been vigilant. In one of my neighbourhoods, I was made, you know, during the time I was made aware of my identity theft, I was keeping an eye out and stopping a lot of criminal activity and that was taking place and assisting police with the crime in the area. So I built a great rapport with them in the end. I knew them by first name and I was kind of asking them questions. You know, there were cars that were stolen and I had them towed, drug deals that were discovered. I liked the fact that I was removing this activity from the area, keeping myself and my neighbours safe. And it was dangerous at times as well, but I just wanted to put an end to that and I helped do that. So that innate nature of stopping criminals helped drive my interest in cybersecurity. And how I went about it as well was I had, as I mentioned, contacts in the industry over the years I reached out to and asked their advice on how to begin. They knew my personality, they're trusted, they're, you know, well known, and they're highly intelligent as well. So it's always good to have people you know who you can reach out to, who can also support you and encourage you, give you that boost of confidence as well that you can do it. It really makes a huge difference to have a mentor. And, you know, they're hardworking, so I kind of really value what they do and their work ethics as well. So I knew they were the people to go to, and I made sure that I was ready to take that leap. Another part of it was I read news articles online as well, in the paper, on cybercrime, subscribe to all news in this area. Just gives me that up-to-date information and I can see what's happening locally and internationally as well. And it also helps in my current role about what's taking place as well. Also love, you know, crime shows and TV shows on cybercrime, and I'm sure a lot of people do. And, you know, just talking about helping and assisting the local police, I've always been interested in investigative work and I like to research and look into a lot of things. So I find myself looking at news and then researching about those people or what's happening. And, you know, I listen to podcasts such as Darknet Diaries, The Security Collective, this one as well, and, you know, Fire and Forge by Hannah. So it's just great listening to those sort of things as well. Sometimes I do that while I'm running. And then I will say, last but not least, my big step was 2 years ago. I enrolled into a 2-year part-time course while working full-time to study cybersecurity. And that was one of the best things I ever did. So initially I felt it was difficult. It was overwhelming as well. But I really wanted to finish the course. And I overcame those fears and doubts as well that everyone has working full-time, studying part-time, you know, especially when you have other things, you know, taking place in life, like moving house, juggling those large things. The fact that I hadn't, you know, didn't know all the terminology or heard of the technical skills or systems that they were using. But I pushed forward and overcame it. And it was a lot of late nights, no sleep, assessments, deadlines, hard work and persistence. So, you know, cybersecurity is so broad, you're never going to know everything. It's a beast. There's a lot of specialized roles, as we know, and it's just constantly changing, the technology and threat actors as well, and new systems and software. So you just never know what's going to come up next.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such an amazing experience, and you definitely have the right personality to the role. So that's really amazing. And you mentioned a few times you wanted to challenge yourself. You like to have a good challenge. What was the biggest challenge that you had to overcome when you were shifting to a cybersecurity role?
Yeah, that's a great question, Michelle. I'd say there's a few, actually. So as I've mentioned, there's so many things to learn and no one's ever going to know everything. I kind of always want to be like, oh, I just want to know everything, just, you know, to our CISO. And he's like, but you never know everything. So as I've mentioned, it's constantly changing. But one of my biggest challenges was, you know, overcoming the fear of speaking as well. So when I started my role just over a year ago, I had never presented to anyone in my EA role. I was kind of in the shadows, in the background, running around doing things. And my boss said, you know, I'd like you to present now to our group of cyber evangelists each month. And I was like, wow. So I had to quickly overcome this. I had to sort of come up with all the content. And I've presented to around 15 to 20 presentations so far this year to the teams and the organizations. So, you know, it's still a daily challenge, but that's also what's exciting. I also learn new things in this field, discovering new things I love, and I'm still developing my technical skills every day. And, you know, it's a very new field of work as well. So there's a lot of experts around me in my team as well. I think also biggest challenge is having such high expectations of yourself as well, which is huge, and expecting you need to know everything. It's kind of unrealistic. So you're kind of your own worst critic. I want to be more technical, use the tools just to understand everything. That's also been a challenge to learn, you know, new things such as acronyms, which we all have in our different teams, but also terminology, understanding what's needed. You know, it helped when I was an EA to our current CISO as well for the year, as I'd need to take minutes for the team lead meetings. And it just helped me immensely knowing what was taking place within the team, their current projects, and just what they were working on, their strategies for cybersecurity and things like that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Lots of challenges that you had to go through. But now let's talk about the successes. So what was your biggest success, and is there something that you are very proud about your career?
Yeah, Michelle. So I've got a few things. So I'm proud that I applied for a cybersecurity position just over a year ago and I got my job that I'm in now. I'm proud that I shifted completely into a different area. It's quite amazing. I kind of always, you know, I did admittedly sort of doubt. I was thinking, oh, how am I going to do this, you know, but I did. I worked hard, I studied, and I really worked hard to do that. I'm proud I completed my course, as you know, as it was just so many hours and late nights of work and being at the screen. So, you know, getting all those assessments completed, I'm proud to be working now in cybersecurity and just helping people and influencing them and educating them on how to change their behavior at work and at home, and seeing those people change their behaviors. And I love just making a difference with that. So it's great to see people being influenced that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you definitely had to have a lot of persistence and focus, which you did. So yeah, you should be very proud of it.
Thank you.
Now, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about your experiences being a victim of identity theft. Can you share us a little bit about what happened? How did you find out?
Yeah, absolutely, Michelle. So I never thought I'd be doing a podcast on this 10 years ago. So I'll give you the exact date. So on Monday, the 7th of October, 2013, I started my new job at Transurban, which was one of the best days of my life because best jobs. But all day I had a private number calling me and I just refused to pick it up because I was already a very private person back then. So later that evening, they just kept calling. It was 9 p.m. and I thought, I'll just pick it up. I'll have to pick it up. So I finally picked it up and it was the police. And the policeman said, and I'll say that these were his exact words I'll never forget. So he said, we have reason to believe that someone is using your details to obtain financial gain. So it was very monotone. It was very technical and didn't understand at the time or grasp what he was saying. And I started to panic and I kept asking, sorry, what do you mean? And after that, I didn't even, you know, register what he was saying because I could only take in that paragraph that he said. So I didn't even trust the police officer. I had to ask him where he was from and search for him as well. And he was being very evasive. So I felt like my mind went blank. I was being questioned. He wasn't being too open. And it was almost like he was interviewing me and kind of trying to find out information. So my life changed and it was one of the worst things that ever happened to me and still I think about it, you know, I obviously experience it never ends once you become a victim. And it's a really long story, but I'll be speaking in more detail at CISO Melbourne in July this year, thanks to Michelle. thank you so much for giving me that opportunity. So it's a very complex situation and I still feel every emotion that you can when it comes to this, but I can give you a brief snapshot. So I worked with police, fraud teams and a friend in the industry to try and work out how it happened. And the police believe, from what I understand, 30 women's IDs were stolen and one of those was mine. The criminals took out personal loans, credit cards, they bought diamond rings, they set up all kinds of accounts in my name. And my credit rating completely plummeted and my life spiraled out of control. It sounds traumatic, but it's true. It was like, you know, once you find out, another thing would come up and you'd be constantly trying to fix everything and you're trying to prove who you are to clear things up. So a few years ago in another company, which I was being hit with loans taken out in my name and sort of had a staff member laugh in my face. And I remember just asking them to just not laugh. It completely devastated me that they were laughing and it just hurt. They didn't understand what I was going through and it's just very debilitating as well. So it's absolutely devastating to this day. The effects are enormous. I struggle for people to really understand how bad it is if they've not experienced it because it never gets fixed and you can't recover. No one really wants to hear about it unless they know someone it's happened to or happened to them. But I think that's slowly changing through, you know, this time. People are starting to see how easily it can happen with them with all the data breaches that are occurring with the Optus and Medibank data breach and awareness around this.
Wow, that's a big experience. And I can understand why you felt confused and emotional, especially because it was something that happened 10 years ago. Nowadays, it's cybersecurity and the importance of protecting our identity is becoming a bit more, people are becoming a little bit more aware, but 10 years ago, things were not like that. So I totally appreciate it was a devastating experience. And at the time things were happening, what was your biggest concern?
Yeah, so biggest concerns, I try to keep a level head now. Back then, it was really hard to, it was devastating, but I've now sort of tried to manage my head, you know, if something happens. But, you know, understanding or getting help a decade ago, no one really knew what to do except experts in their own areas. You know, now that I'm working in cybersecurity and educating people, I need to not panic, including myself. So I guess biggest concerns are that I ensure my credit file's always kept clean, I'm not targeted with personal loans being taken out in my name, but also what else has been done in my name, you know, I don't see or hear about as well. So, you know, I mean, you see what hits your credit file, but you don't know what else is being done. That doesn't, you know, come up on your credit file. So I don't like to think about it. I can only control what I can. And the police are very aware of the severity of my identity theft. They've said they've never seen anyone targeted so badly. And, you know, I've got a record of this. So the biggest concern is if I'm applying for a home loan, for example, or in the process of it and knocked back because of criminals, you know, that almost happened to me twice. So those are the kind of things, yeah.
So what did you do? How did you go about finding ways to fix it?
So I have a friend who works in the industry, and to this day he still works in this field. He's awesome. So at the time he worked for one of the big banks, and I had one of my previous bosses basically get me in contact with him. So that's how I met him. So I'm still in touch with him today, 10 years ago. So it's great. So he worked with me to help look at how it may have happened. So we were kind of scrambling through things. I also worked with banks that the criminals took out credit card loans in my name and worked with their fraud teams. Also worked closely with police trying to help investigate this. We all found pieces of information and we worked together to piece it all. It took me 6 months to fix my credit file, so it was a mess. And it took months and hours on the phone to companies, typing letters, obtaining stat decks, visits to the police station all the time. They kind of got sick of me, working with experts. And I changed all the ID I could as well. And it was really hard to do that back then, 10 years ago. It's not as, now that it's been so, it feels much easier today, I think, because there's more awareness. So I also took down all evidence and wrote notes on everything at the time and documented everything. I've got a really large leverage folder full of documents, and I actually get emotional and find this really hard to look at. There's a lot of stuff in there. I reported everything to police, banks and teams I worked with. I now have a ban on my credit file. So from 2019, I found you could do this via ID Care. And that helped me immensely to stop any further attempts in my name, because it was constantly happening all the time. So I have alerts that come up that let me know if someone sold my details on the dark web or used my information to get a loan. When that's happened, I've put a stop to it immediately with the banks, and I basically stop it before they can obtain any money now.
Wow, it's incredible. How did that impact your mental health?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Michelle. So even talking about it today, you kind of really, it just completely devastated me and still does to this day. So I still get emotional about it. My life just felt completely out of control after discovering this. I felt completely lost and alone, and no one really understood how I felt. So I also had, you know, feeling anxious and worried. I'd admittedly cry a lot. I wouldn't eat properly. I'd be up all hours of the night trying to find out how it happened. You know, people became tired of listening about it. I felt very isolated and alone at the time. Also felt really angry that someone had done this and completely ruined my life in that way. As dramatic as that sounds, it did. And my life will never be the same. It's taken a huge toll on my life, my relationships and my health. I still feel anxious about whether something else will come up. And I know there are other bank accounts currently set up in my name that banks won't close. They say they need a stat deck from police, yet I've filled in so many stat decks. So my story is definitely long, and I can't tell you everything in this session. It's a complex situation to be in, and there's so much to sift through and go through, but I still feel angry about it. It does affect me to this day. People joke about it, but if it ever happens, it's no joke. It did actually almost stop me purchasing one of my homes. I had two consecutive strikes from a criminal attempting to take out loans and credit cards in my name, and if it happened on the third day, the bank would not have approved it, even though they knew it was fraud. So my broker said, you know, it just won't get approved. So recently as well, I had a bank say never to lend to this person again because of what happened a couple of years ago. And I'd cleared it with them and you know, they had still had that on my file. I kind of think they forgot to have taken that off. So I had to call them and escalate it to a higher person. And it was only because of the criminals. So my broker didn't even believe. He's like, no way would it have been just because of an attempt 2 years ago. And I'm like, yes, I guarantee it is. So it was. But I've been devastated by the effects it's had on me, my relationships, my health, my well-being, the limitations I've had financially, the struggle to get my credit report back to good health, the desperation and frustration in proving who I am and that I'm not the criminal. And it's really exhausting and debilitating experience. It's one that doesn't go away. Once you're a victim, you are for life. And my ID would be sold online to other criminals and they just continue to try and use it.
Wow. I'm so sorry you had to go through all of these, Cozy. But I think it's also very important that you are stepping up and talking about it because there are other people out there facing similar issues. So it's really important that we, you know, use these as an awareness strategy to make sure that everybody understands the importance of, you know, protecting their identity. So thank you so much for being so brave and sharing your experience with us.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
I'm really curious to know, because you seem like you are, you know, at a much better position right now. How did you overcome all this stress you went through?
Yeah, that's a great question. And for anyone that's also got ID theft. So there's always a level of anxiety I have with this. It's always just sort of there hovering a bit. There wasn't much I could do but go through those range of emotions. So let myself cry or be angry. You just have to, you know, you can't pretend that you're not feeling those things. So I'd go for very long runs. That's how I manage stress in general. So sometimes my dad's like, why are you running so much? Also going away for a weekend to the country. I used to live in Macedon, Mount Macedon. So it's just beautiful to get away, be in, you know, the greenery. I studied graphic design and they say green is a healing color as well. So being amongst, you know, nature is amazing. And also doing yoga, listening to music or podcasts, just trying to, you know, I was constantly looking for things to try and sort through things, but it's good to step away. So if anyone's ever had that experience, it's good to just take a break. You need to look after yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing some amazing tips. And I agree with you. Just, you know, going for a run or yoga or being in nature, it's definitely a good way to not overcome things, but, you know, just disconnect a little bit so then you can come back to things with a fresh mind. Now, you are also a very brave person to use your personal experience and inspire and educate others. My next question is, how do you think cyber awareness can improve based on your experience?
Yeah, that's a great question, Michelle. I think people need to start having cybersecurity front of mind. So like we do for safety, you know, we look left and right all the time when we cross the road. We don't think twice. We kind of automatically do that. So we kind of need to do the same sort of thing with cybersecurity, having that awareness like we do with safety. We need to be more vigilant, not as trusting as well. So it's like, you know, we know when something doesn't feel like when we may be in danger walking down a dark street or driving down the wrong road. We also need to be streetwise online as well with our own very, you know, personal data, and that may be online or offline. I think companies need to change how they manage our data, do checks on people, and also what, you know, we need to provide to organisations that look at how they retain information. So, you know, I'm not sure how, you know, whether they're destroying the information after a certain amount of time. They also need to consider where they're holding our data. Is it overseas? Is the data encrypted? Those sort of things are pretty important. There's so many factors to consider.
Yeah, absolutely. And what is your advice for anyone who is a victim of identity theft or knows someone who becomes a victim of this crime?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me personally, I know probably other people will have different ideas, but mine is register with a large credit agency and obtain a free credit report just to check everything's okay. Check that, you know, you've, those addresses that are on there that you've got are your previous addresses. Place a ban on your credit file immediately or once you've cleaned it up. I can't stress this enough. That completely stopped any more issues for me. I'd also encourage people to pay an annual fee and register their details for extra caution to monitor their personal details in case anything happens, and check your credit report on a regular basis. So shred everything with your name and address, phone number, and any other details that identify you. I was doing that already 10 years ago, but I still do this today. And it doesn't matter if it's a small little label from a parcel, just shred everything that you have. Never send your ID via scan copy to places. And if you have to, I'd put a watermark over the top of it and just say it's been given to X company for the purposes of X reason. But mostly never do it if you can. Try and avoid that. Don't hand your ID to people, for example, like the post office. I kind of break out in a sweat every time. Let them cite it. Don't let them take it out of your hands. So you'll kind of see them say, can I have, you know, and they'll kind of look offended, but I'll say, no, you can look at it, but don't touch it. Limit things you post on social media as well. There's a lot of things that people can piece together on social media if bad actors get that information. And if anyone ever calls, as we know in cybersecurity, and asks for your details from a company, say you'll call them back rather than just trust the caller. Like, I've even rung my bank and they're like, you know, can we ring you back? And I'm like, no, because I'll need to ring you back and wait an hour. I'll have to do the hour. It's better to just know that you're calling the right people and not calling a number from an email, or you know that it's, you know, from the actual app or their website.
Some amazing tips here. Thank you so much, Cozy, for sharing these ideas with us. And definitely, I think it's very important that we, as citizens, as people, we are aware of things, and then we can take some steps to prevent it. And even though some organizations or some companies might be offended, it's our personal data. We should be taking care of it.
Yeah, absolutely, Michelle. And obviously I did add in, you know, just those basic cybersecurity things like your, you know, multi-factor authentication, always try and get, you know, have long passwords, passphrases to put in there, you know, just those general basic cybersecurity things that you need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Cozy, it's been an amazing conversation. I just want to ask one last question. Would you have any takeaway for our audience today based on what we spoke about?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a few things I'd love to say. Is biggest takeaway for audience is to be vigilant. Don't always trust so easily. That can be with your personal data, physical ID, what details you provide, you know, and who to. So if someone calls and says they're from a bank, call the bank back. Like I've said, don't assume it's a legitimate call. Ensure you have long passphrases, like I mentioned, the passwords, use a password manager. Ensure you have the multi-factor authentication or two-factor authentication on your accounts. Check your credit file. If you've never, ever, ever checked it, check it now. Highly recommend you go do that. You can get a free report and check everything on there. Take it a step further and register and pay for an annual fee. They're not very big, the fees, just to monitor your information such as credit cards, bank accounts, Medicare numbers, email addresses. It's really important your credit file is clean and accurate, and it's not something you can leave for a company to clean up or the police. Don't ever assume that if you've been breached, you know, had that, you know, experience with Medibank or Optus, don't assume that that company is going to clean your credit file, because you are responsible to do that. And trust yourself, follow your heart, and also what you're passionate about. Find yourself a good supporter mentor in the industry as well, that you want to build a career in, and it's never too late to do it. Don't think you're not smart enough to study or work in another field. You can actually do anything if you believe in yourself and you actually love what you do. Life is way too short.
Absolutely. Oh, way too short. Thank you so much, because it's been very, very inspiring. It's been lovely to chat to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Michelle. It's been amazing to talk to you.
And I'll see you in Sizo Melbourne in July.
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait.
Me neither. We hope you have enjoyed the Business of InfoSec podcast. Be sure to subscribe from whatever you're currently listening. Plus, if you're listening from Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving us a review. As always, you can find us and engage with us on social media, as well as on the Business of InfoSec website, where you can find this podcast, as well as other topical articles, reports, and videos. So, until next time, take care.